Welcome to the Shortwave Report for September 21st, 2012. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com, you can find a schedule for dozens of international broadcasters in English. There you can also listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from China Radio International, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, The Voice of Russia, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We'll begin with China Radio International. A poll by the Pew Research Center found that 65% of Americans think that U.S.-China relations are good. Russia has told the U.S. Agency for International Development to leave the country, accusing the agency of meddling in domestic affairs. A report on the anti-Japan protests spreading across China in response to the new Japanese claim on disputed islands in the East China Sea. China Radio International.
A poll conducted by the Pew Research Center's Global Attitudes Project has found that most Americans support strong relations with China. With China being considered a competitor rather than an enemy, 65% of Americans view China-U.S. relations as good, compared with 29% who think otherwise. Meanwhile, 55% of Americans advocate building a strong relationship with China, while most Americans also remain vigilant about China's fast rise as a world power. 66% of Americans regard China as a competitor, compared with 16% of those who see China as a partner and 15% as an enemy. The poll was released at a time when the U.S. President Barack Obama and the Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney compete to harden their China-bashing rhetoric in order to win more votes. It's been confirmed that Russia has requested that the U.S. Agency for International Development leave the country from the beginning of October. Russia is accusing the agency of trying to influence its domestic political affairs. Russia's foreign ministry says that Moscow has warned Washington several times. USAID is the United States' primary official foreign aid agency. The agency opened its office in Moscow in 1992.
Police in South China's Guangzhou have detained 11 people for allegedly smashing a Japanese-branded car, shop windows, and billboards during anti-Japan protests on Sunday. Across China, some of the violent anti-Japan protests have caused damage to some Japanese restaurants and cars. The protests appear to have forced some Japanese companies, including Panasonic and Canon, to suspend operations in some Chinese cities. Authorities are calling for people to keep their protests peaceful. 65-year-old Beijing retiree Sui Qiwen says she hopes for a peaceful resolution to the Diaoyu disputes.
I support Chinese people protesting our country's position, and I support our country sending out a tough message. But we don't want to see a war or other unnecessary actions, and hope that we can maintain the peace we have built over such a long time. We have to give Japan a serious warning.
That view has been echoed by some fellow Chinese in the United States. He Xiaohui is the honorary chairman of the Coordination Council of Chinese American Associations.
We hope the Chinese government can use their wisdom to properly solve the dispute. As for the Japanese government, our hope is for them to stop any kind of illegal purchase of the islands and be engaged in peace and economic cooperation between the two countries.
Calls for a peaceful solution have also been heard in Japan. Magosaki Yukeru is a former Japanese diplomat. He says the two countries should put their differences behind them.
Japan and China both claim the islands, hoping to tighten sovereignty over them. That's why we need to put aside differences. I think Japan did more wrong on this issue. Japan has agreed to the idea of shelving differences before, but it is saying now such agreement did not exist. That's the biggest problem.
Yukeiro says some Japanese politicians are using the Diaoyu dispute to forward their own political interests.
Politicians benefit by hyping the patriotic spirit. Before Tokyo's governor Shintaro Ishihara ignited the territorial tension over the Diaoyu Islands, he was being forgotten by the public. He's getting old, and after his term as the governor, his political career will come to an end. Meanwhile, after Ishihara gained the public attention, he actually shared the popularity with his son, which could now have a bigger chance as the candidate for the leader of the Liberal Democratic Party.
Tensions have been intensified after Japan's central government signed a contract last week with the alleged private owner to buy 3 of the 5 uninhabited islands in the East China Sea. The move has since prompted strong protests from the Chinese government, which has taken a series of measures to assert China's sovereignty over the islands. For CRI, I'm Shen Chengcheng.
Those reports were from China Radio International, heard from 4 to 5 p.m. at 11970 and from 6 p.m. to 11 at either 9790, 6020 or 6190, or on the web at english.cri.cn. All the times I'm announcing are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so adjust them to your time zone. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. China has sent 1,000 vessels to the area where the disputed islands remain uninhabited except for Japanese protesters. France closed 20 of its embassies out of fear of a potential reaction to a magazine publishing satirical cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. In South Africa, after workers at one mine accepted a wage increase, workers at other mines stepped up their strikes. Germany has created a new database of suspected neo-Nazis and their associates. Italy's highest court has reinstated guilty verdicts against 23 CIA agents for their 2003 abduction of an Egyptian cleric in Milan. The Occupy Wall Street campaign returned on the first anniversary of the demonstrations. Arctic sea ice has shrunk to the smallest surface area since record-keeping began. 2 Palestinians were killed in their car by the Israeli Air Force in the Gaza Strip. Iran has told the International Atomic Energy Agency that it believes that sabotage caused the blast, which shut down power at one of its nuclear facilities last month. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
China has sent around 1,000 vessels to disputed islands in the East China Sea in an ongoing spat with Japan over the territory. There are also reports that Japanese activists briefly occupied one of the islands. The row is over the Diaoyu Islands, as they are known in China, or the Senkaku Islands, which is their Japanese name. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Hang Li made his country's position clear.
The China of today is no longer the kind of country to be bullied. The Chinese government and the Chinese people will not allow our land to be invaded. Japan's illegal act of purchasing the islands is not acceptable and will not be allowed.
Last week, Japan announced that it had bought the islands from Japanese private owners. However, China says it has the right to take further action while hoping for a peaceful solution. Deutsche Welle correspondent Ruud Kishner is in Beijing following events.
China doesn't look ready to back down and has even stoked the national sentiment further by sending patrol ships and fishing boats and by its very own uncompromising rhetoric. Just today, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said that China is no longer a country to be bullied. We have seen a massive police presence at the Japanese embassy today, and those protests might not be allowed to continue much longer.
Tens of thousands took part in anti-Japan protests across China on Tuesday, which also marked the anniversary of Japan's attempt to invade China's northeast on September 18, 1931.
France's foreign ministry announced the closure of 20 of its embassies on Friday following the publication of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad in a satirical magazine. Embassies, consulates, cultural centres and international French schools will be closed on Friday for fear of violence erupting following weekly Muslim prayers. Riot police were deployed outside the office of the magazine which published the cartoon as a precautionary measure. Tensions are already strained in the Muslim world, with over 30 people having been killed since protests began last week over the anti-Islam film Innocence of Muslims. Demonstrations against the film are continuing across the world, with angry protesters burning American flags and chanting anti-American slogans outside American embassies and other missions across the globe. South African police on Wednesday fired tear gas and rubber bullets in an attempt to disperse protesters near a mine run by the world's biggest platinum producer, Anglo American Platinum. The unrest comes after workers at the rival Lonmin mine won big pay rises on Wednesday. Within hours of the 22% wage increase being accepted, workers at nearby mine sites called for similar wage increases. Industrial action across South Africa's mining sector has been ongoing for 6 weeks and has claimed the lives of more than 40 people. Germany's Interior Ministry on Wednesday officially launched a national database with information on suspected neo-Nazi extremists. The new database links the findings of German police and intelligence agencies on both state and federal levels with information about violent right-wing extremists and their associates. Interior Minister Hans-Peter Friedrich described the new database as a milestone in improving the cooperation between German security agencies. Authorities hope this information will help prevent errors as seen with the National Socialist Underground, or NSU, a group of neo-Nazis suspected of killing ethnic Turks over a 7-year period. The murders went undetected by security forces until late 2011. Italy's highest court has reinstated guilty verdicts against 23 CIA agents for the 2003 abduction of an Egyptian cleric in Milan. The CIA agents were not in attendance in one of the world's biggest court cases against the United States. The agents were each served prison sentences of between 7 and 9 years. Italy's Justice Ministry will now make a formal request for the agents to be extradited. The United States said it will not release the former CIA operatives. The court also ordered the retrial of 5 former Italian spies accused of taking part in the cleric's abduction.
The Occupy Wall Street campaign began the week by celebrating its first anniversary with a day of demonstrations around New York's financial center. The movement began last year as a protest against what was seen as the excesses of the banking system. There were 150 arrests as activists marched around Lower Manhattan. Events were held in 30 other cities as organizers hoped the anniversary would help to revitalize the movement.
U.S. scientists warned on Wednesday that Arctic sea ice has shrunk to its smallest surface area since record-keeping began in 1979. They added that this was taking the world into uncharted territory as climate change intensifies. Every year, Arctic sea ice expands and contracts seasonally, with the lowest extent usually occurring in September. This year's minimum followed a season already full of records for shrinking ice, with the lowest ever amount of coverage recorded on August 26th and again on September 4th. A National Snow and Ice Data Center scientist said that man-made global warming has melted more sea ice and made it thinner. 2 Palestinian militants were killed by the Israeli Air Force and one other was seriously injured in the Gaza Strip, the Palestinian Health Ministry said on Wednesday. The dead were members of the extremist group Islamic Jihad, said a spokesman for the Gaza's Health Ministry. The men were riding in a car in the city of Rafah near the border with Egypt when their vehicle was struck by 2 rockets. According to witnesses, 2 Russian-made rockets were fired from Rafah toward Israel just prior to the Israel attack. The Israeli military confirmed the attack but made no further comment.
Iran has told the International Atomic Energy Agency that it suspects sabotage was behind explosive blasts that cut power to one of its nuclear facilities last month. The head of Iran's atomic agency asked the UN's nuclear watchdog on Monday if its unannounced visit the day after the alleged incident, which occurred on August 17, had anything to do with the detonation. In the past, Iran has suggested foul play in other instances of apparent sabotage. The country says its nuclear program is to provide atomic energy, but several countries believe Tehran is seeking to create nuclear weapons.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, mediacenter.dw-world.de. On to the voice of Russia. Evidence is mounting that the U.S. government is creating more computer viruses to use in cyber attacks against its presumed enemies. Spyware has also been installed in government computers in Iran and other countries in the Middle East. The voice of Russia.
Reuters reports that the Kaspersky Labs and American Symantec Corp. have uncovered a growing body of evidence that the U.S. is creating more computer viruses to be used in cyber warfare against its adversaries. Researchers have linked three previously unknown malwares to the U.S. government. It is suspected that Pentagon intends to use these viruses to attack enemy computer systems or for cyber espionage.
Sophisticated cyber weapons, such as the ones used by the U.S. government, are usually very hard to detect because they are designed to self-destruct after the completion of their missions. However, cyber investigators at Kaspersky and Symantec announced on Monday that they managed to identify scraps of code that reveal the existence of a program called Flame, a program used for surveillance against Iran. The evidence uncovered separately by Kaspersky and Symantec suggests that the creators of Flame have authored another three malicious programs aimed at Iran that could be just as dangerous.
The U.S. government, along with Israel, has famously been linked to the Stuxnet virus, which sabotaged the Iranian nuclear program and became the world's first known cyber weapon. Experts at Symantec, which helped uncover Stuxnet, described the malicious program as the equivalent of a laser-guided missile, compared to which the older generation of viruses and trojans seem like crude bombs, because of its advanced capability of wreaking massive damage to digital infrastructure.
Although the U.S. has never officially confirmed its involvement in the creation of the supervirus, experts maintain that Stuxnet was clearly a work of U.S. government agencies. Mike McConnell, the former director of national intelligence at the National Security Agency, admitted to Reuters in January of this year that the U.S. had attacked foreign computer systems at one time or another, and confirmed that America has the ability to attack, degrade, or destroy electronic systems of its enemies.
Then, in September 2011, a surveillance malware known as Doku was unearthed. This was followed by Flame and a similar virus known as Gauss. But according to digital sleuths at Kaspersky, there may be much, much more to the U.S. cyber warfare program targeting Iran than anyone could have previously suspected.
According to the research by Symantec, Kaspersky Lab, and the United Nations International Telecommunication Union, Flame was built by a group of at least four developers as early as December 2006. Its existence was uncovered in May of this year, after the Iranian authorities realized their computers had been leaking data to foreign servers. Following a forensic analysis of two command and control servers for Flame, the labs concluded there are yet more worms to be found. For now, little is known about the newly identified viruses, but one of them is already operational in the Middle East, although it is not clear for what purpose.
Alexander Gostev, chief security expert at Kaspersky Lab, said in a statement, "The servers were able to receive data from infected machines using four different protocols. Only one was used by computers to attack with Flame. The existence of three additional protocols not used by Flame provides proof that at least three other Flame-related malicious programs were created, and their nature is currently unknown." Mr. Gostev added, "Flame's creators are good at covering their tracks, but one mistake of the attackers helped us discover more data."
Gostev noted that the findings point to a vast undercover surveillance program, which could have been going on for over 5 years. More than 5 gigabytes of data were being uploaded from more than 5,000 infected machines to just one command and control server in Europe each week. Most of the targeted computers were in Iran, some in Sudan. Flame secretly took screenshots and snooped on network traffic and keystrokes and recorded audio conversations before uploading this sensitive data to servers of its handlers abroad. Kaspersky described their discovery as certainly an example of cyber espionage conducted on a massive scale.
What is clear from the examples of Flame and Stuxnet is that stealth cyber operations are becoming increasingly commonplace when it comes to undermining adversaries. there are some serious advantages to digital versus physical attacks. John Baumgartner, a research director for the U.S. Cyber Consequences Unit, said that the use of such cyber operations equates to putting digital boots on the ground in a foreign country, sparing American lives in the short term. He told the Christian Science Monitor that the CIA doesn't need to embed a spy inside Iran, and the U.S. military doesn't need to send a stealth fighter to bomb something.
That report was from the Voice of Russia. Russia is now heard from 6 p.m. to 11 at 15-425-9800 and 9665, or through their website www.english.ruvr.ru. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or would like to make a donation for production cost of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please support independently produced radio programs like the freely distributed shortwave report. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu continues to push for military action against Iran, much as he did 20 years ago. Israeli occupation forces have begun war game maneuvers in the northern Golan Heights. Casualties among Syrian rebel forces include mercenaries from Pakistan, Libya, Yemen, Afghanistan, Tunisia, and Somalia. Spanish Prime Minister Rajoy expressed worry over the huge separatist demonstrations taking place in Barcelona and the Catalonian region. Paraguayans took to the streets demonstrating against seeds and pesticides made by Monsanto. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continues to press his case for military action against Iran, despite apparent resistance from the United States. Speaking to reporters from the U.S. TV network NBC, Netanyahu claims that Iran is close to developing the enriched uranium needed for a nuclear weapon. The Israeli Prime Minister said that Tehran is getting closer and closer and closer to the achievement of weapons-grade material. Netanyahu claims that Iran is only 6 months away from being about 90% of having the enriched uranium for an atom bomb. Despite his warning of a 6-month window before Iran advances its alleged nuclear weapons program, this wasn't the first time Netanyahu has made such a prediction. In 1992, 20 years ago, Netanyahu said that Iran was just 3 to 5 years from developing a nuclear weapon and urged U.S.-led international action to stop the purported threat. Israeli occupation forces have begun military maneuvers in the northern Golan Heights. According to reports from Tel Aviv, troops from the northern and central command were moved without prior notice by order of the Israeli Chief of Staff, General Benny Gantz. The war games, held near the border with Syria, involved a wide range of military maneuvers in the occupied Golan Heights. The Israeli army said they were designed to test the readiness and fitness of a number of Israeli fighting units. On Thursday, the second day of the maneuvers, Israeli occupation troops reportedly practiced with live ammunition. Tel Aviv insisted that the troop deployment, which included airlifting and moving large forces to the area and offensive fire, did not reflect current tensions with Syria. However, an army source told Haaretz Daily that a similar drill carried out recently that deployed two divisions was more than a coincidence, and Wednesday's drill comes only a week after the Israeli army held an even larger maneuver in the adjoining Galilee region facing the Lebanese border. Syrian government forces have carried out an offensive against armed rebels, inflicting numerous casualties on foreign mercenaries fighting among their ranks. In Aleppo, the country's industrial capital and largest city, clashes continued around a complex of schools in the district of Kasr Bustan. According to Sana, the Syrian news agency, among the dead were Pakistanis, Libyans, Yemenis, Afghans, Tunisians, and Somalis. Government forces engaged the armed rebels near a police station in the neighborhood of Al-Salahin in Aleppo, killing a number of rebel fighters and wounding others. In the western city of Latakia, in the neighborhood of Al-Rahin Basatin, a weapons cache was raided near a building under construction, including PKC machine guns, AK-47 rifles, sniper rifles, pistols with snipers, with silencers, RPG launchers, and ammunition. Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has called on the Convergence and Union Party to avoid political instability in Catalonia, following a mass demonstration last week that called for independence of the autonomous region. In an appearance before the Spanish Parliament, Rajoy criticized the demonstration that took place on September 11th, which saw some 500,000 people take to the streets with separatist slogans. The Spanish Prime Minister said he would meet with the head of the Convergence and Union Party, Artur Mas, on Thursday. Mas will reportedly insist on the economic sovereignty of Catalonia in the form of a separate Ministry of Finance. He has said that if he does not get the go-ahead, he will call for another mass protest. Many analysts believe that the withdrawal of Catalonia from Spain means automatic exit from the European Union, but Catalonians believe that they will be able to begin the process of rejoining. Catalonia pays 16 billion euros annually to the central government, much more than is given back. Catalonia wants fiscal autonomy, the right to collect taxes, and pay to the total budget depending on the income level. Spanish analysts unanimously say that Mas will return from Madrid empty-handed and will hold, as promised, early parliamentary elections that will become a referendum for self-determination. The Convergence and Union Party won the last parliamentary elections in 2010, and today, together with the Separatist Party's Initiative for Catalonia and the Republican Party of Catalonia, has an absolute majority in the parliament.
Paraguayans took to the streets of downtown Asunción on Monday to protest against the sale of products allegedly detrimental to farmers' health, crops, land, and the environment by Monsanto, a U.S.-based multinational biotechnology company. A report by Prince Latino's agency said that social organizations taking part in the Campaign for Life and Human Rights have joined an international movement called Occupy Monsanto, which is staging protests worldwide. The protesters carried posters that read, "Monsanto, get out of Paraguay," and "We stand for life," while other banners made reference to the facto president Federico Franco with messages like, "Monfranco out." Some participants addressed a crowd from an area near the Pantheon of the Heroes, denouncing the serious damage caused to the farmers' health, the environment and lands by seeds and pesticides sold by Monsanto to Paraguay.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba, heard from 1 p.m. to 2 at 11760, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6060, 6010, or 6000. Also streaming on the web from 6 p.m. to midnight at www.radiohc.cu, and now podcasting at World Radio Network, that's wrn.org. All the times I announced are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage you to listen to international broadcast. You could use a shortwave radio at home, which is far simpler than you might think. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is also quite easy. See the links at this program's website. Every Friday morning, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters, make a safe donation through PayPal, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report is free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.